Our first guest here on Downtown this afternoon has been a writer for the New York Times, the Sports of the Times columnist since 2014, and he is the author of a powerful and wonderful new book entitled Canyon Dreams, A Basketball Season on the Navajo Nation. Michael Powell joins us. Michael, good to have you back with us.
Hi, glad to be here.
Man, oh man, I can't say enough good things about this book. It's a sports book, but it is so much more. It is so poignant, so powerful that I couldn't put it down. And you've done a great thing here, Michael.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that, and I very much appreciated the review last week. It is gratifying.
Well, and a wonderful story behind it. It was for you and your wife a return in many ways to the Navajo Nation.
Yes, we had been there. Geez, a quarter century ago, I guess dating myself, she had worked there as a midwife for a couple of months at the Indian Health Service, and we had lived with our then little boys in a trailer and really kind of fell in love with this gigantic land. I mean, it's the size of West Virginia or the Republic of Ireland. Both kind of a magical and beautiful place, also heartbreaking at times. I mean, they wrestle, the Navajos wrestle with all of the problems of kind of rural America and of course, that Native Americans also wrestle with, across the nation. And fascinating time.
Can you talk a little bit about res ball and the importance of basketball for the Navajo people?
Sure. I mean, it's interesting. The game itself goes back on the reservation, goes back to, probably the early part of the last century. And it was essentially, kids were taken away by the Bureau of Indian Affairs and taken to these boarding schools where the attempt was, frankly, to kind of deprogram them of their Indianness, their Native Americanness, their mouths are washed out with soap if they spoke Navajo and all this kind of stuff. And one of the things that they started doing was playing basketball, and it, in a way, it kind of speaks to their culture, which is very much a collective culture. So you have five boys or girls, because girls play it, no less than boys there, interacting, very high rate of speed. They run. Running is, of course, woven into Native American culture, certainly in the Southwest. I mean, distance running is sort of second only to basketball, or maybe third behind rodeo, too. So this really kind of speaks to them in some way, and it is this incredibly fast and, when done well, incredibly entertaining sort of basketball with, sneakers squeaking and just kind of running with guys coming in almost like hockey shifts. In other words, they won't just, sub in a sixth man or a seventh man, which might get a whole line of players coming in because they're running so fast, and it's an awful lot of fun, frankly, to watch.
This is Bruce, Michael. One of the things that was really compelling about the book, and Rich and I as both been are both high school teachers and now or in the past and coaches, is the way that this is viewed by some people, the success at basketball, as a way out of the reservation, and at the same time can put fear in parents that it might lead to their child leaving the reservation, something that we see here with Penobscot and Passamaquoddy students. Can you go on a little bit to how that works? Because I really wanted to explain that last week, but I didn't really know how to do it.
Yeah, no, thanks, Bruce. And I think that's a great point. Because, I mean, I think what you see is, I mean, you have this entity, the Navajo Reservation, enormous, beautiful, full of, sacred peaks and mesas and all this kind of meaning to people. And you have these intricate clans and families where, you'll see 60, 70, 80 cousins a week. And to leave that, which basketball, in basketball, as it is in you know, inner city culture, and a lot of cultures are in our country, it potentially gives a way out, right? Because the best players have a chance to play either at community colleges around the Southwest. They have a chance because they get exposed to the outside world more. They have a chance to go to University of Arizona, Arizona State, all this sort of thing. But that causes a lot of fear. In that culture, that you will, for those leaving, that if you, there's sort of a double-edged worry, because on the one hand, there's the worry, you know, God, can I make it out there? Can I compete in what is called the Bilagana world, the world of the whites? And if I succeed, and many do, I mean, there are very successful Navajo developers and lawyers and doctors sprinkled all through that area, can I return? You know, am I losing some part of my essential, you know, Navajo being? And for their parents and grandparents, that's also a worry. So that it's not unusual to hear kids talking about going, or parents even saying, yeah, it'd be great to go. But in the end, they kind of put pressure, but, you know, wouldn't you like to go to Diné, the local community college? And that's a real, you know, it's a stress for these kids. Frankly, a number of them that I watched ended up at the local community college. And these are bright kids, and, you know, they would have been better off, I think, speaking, I suppose, the parent in me, if they had gone further away. But I get that tension.
We're talking with Michael Powell about his book, Canyon Dreams. The centerpiece of the book is the coach of the team, Raul Mendoza, just an absolutely fascinating individual. I have the sense that he's somebody you'll never forget.
Oh, not at all. No, he's a really a terrific and complicated human being. And, you know, he was both a counselor and a coach, and the two are very much interwoven for him. I mean, his whole thing is, frankly, kind of less, I mean, he gets them to play terrific defense, and that tends to set them apart, but it's less his X's and O's and more his kind of head work that he does with the kids. And he himself is not a Navajo, but comes from the Tono Udom tribe, which spans the Mexican-Arizona border, is enormously impoverished tribe. I mean, makes the, you know, quite a bit more so than the Navajos. And he grew up in really what was like an 18th century hamlet in the desert. And, you know, kind of by force of will, forced himself to leave that, to get a college education. He married a Navajo, and he's now spent, you know, really his adult life working in and around the Navajo reservation. Yeah, he's a terrific and complicated character. Complicated, I should say, you know, largely in the very best sense of that word.
The players, of course, are walking very much in two different worlds. And I was fascinated by the religious aspect as well, that a number of the Navajo are Christians, but have also stayed very close to the tribal traditions, the stories, the oral traditions that go back thousands of years. And they're comfortable living in both of those worlds.
Completely. And that's one of the things that as a white guy wandering in at first took some getting used to, because someone would describe themselves, and they were right, as a Catholic or as a Mormon or as a evangelical. At the same time, they'll go to the Native American church where they might do a peyote ceremony, and they'll go to a medicine man, and they'll do their traditional beauty way or protection way chants. And, I mean, for instance, obviously it was sort of metaphorically perfect, the Catholic church there is built as an eight-sided hogan. The hogan is the Navajo's traditional structure. So, you know, the Catholics, no fools. They know that, you know, if you want to get folks to come, you know, give them something that feels familiar to them. And they've actually adapted even the Catholic Church, some of their prayers, kind of adapt, you know, the beauty way. You walk in the way of that and Jesus, of course. I mean, so it's a very interesting mix. And things like magic and the non-material are very real there. I mean, it's a very porous membrane, and you kind of just get used to that living there. I mean, used to people, seeing the world that way.
One of the great beauties of this book is the way that, as the reader learns about the Navajo people, you have the Navajo people explain it for us rather than explain it yourself. How difficult was it, or was it difficult, to get some of these people to really open up so that we heard the story from them and you didn't have to report it so much?
You know, that's a great question. I think a lot of it, I mean, I was lucky enough to live there about 5 months. I had, I'd been there a year before even that, for maybe a month, doing some articles for the Times, and I had that experience a long time ago there, so that helped. But a lot of it is really just kind of trying to quiet my very Western mind and just kind of giving it some time, because people were largely, I mean, in fact, vastly, people were friendly and willing to talk, but they wanted to get to know you, and they wanted to, you had to kind of keep showing up for a while. So, after a month and a half, I kind of looked around and thought, I haven't gotten what I need. But then things started to happen, because I think I teach a little bit of journalism, and one of the things I always say is that, a good interview is a guided conversation, and sometimes you're not even the guide, right? Sometimes you're just sitting and talking with people. And, I would say 2 or 3 months in, I was having some, wonderful conversations with people, and they were kind of serving as my guides.
Well, yeah, that's a remarkable way of explaining the relationship between the Navajo people and their land. And I really see that. Are you able to sleep at night without dreaming of that reservation?
There are many times I dream of it, and there are times when I look at pictures of it and kind of choke up, because it is not my land, and I always like say that it's their land, but it is a great honor to live there. And I remember years ago when my wife was working there as a midwife, and one of the older midwives in that practice at the hospital, who'd lived there, geez, like 30 years. Now, she was a white woman, so she was going to, when she retired, she was going to have to leave there. But I remember, sitting around a table with her, and, she was just kind of choking up, right, talking about the kind of the depth of the relationships there. And that very much comes through. And it's not to put any kind of a gloss on it. I mean, there's a lot of, unemployment is really high. Alcoholism is a big problem there. I mean, there's all kinds of problems. But this is, and that kind of sets them apart from some, not all, by any means all, but from some Native tribes. They largely regained their historic lands. They occupy probably 85% of their historic lands, and that does give them, it gives a power to the story.
Well, the description of the land is absolutely breathtaking. The story of the people is so powerful. The book is Canyon Dreams, A Basketball Season on the Navajo Nation. Love the book so much. Michael, great to talk with you. Congratulations on such a wonderful and beautiful piece of work.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate the chance to talk about it and your appreciation of it as well. So much appreciated.
Michael Powell with us here on Downtown.